Welcome to the Rhino Daily Podcast, the daily podcast for sharp entrepreneurs. You'll hear insights and ideas from the world's top entrepreneurs and thought leaders,
designed to help you increase your profits and improve your lifestyle.
Now here's your host, Steve Cypress.
Jason Myers is a pilot, entrepreneur, multi-best-selling author, and lifestyle mentor. He has been founder, leader, and chief growth agent for many companies, including CXO Collective and Guerrilla Marketing. His passion for the finer things in life is only eclipsed by his passion to help others achieve their own definition of the ideal lifestyle. Connect with Jason by going to jasonmyersmentor.com.
Let's get started with part one.
Jason Myers, what an absolute pleasure it is to have you here with us today on the Rhino Daily Podcast.
Thanks, Steve.
I am looking forward to this because, I mean, I want to get right into it because, first of all, as people have heard, I mean, you are involved in, I mean, we'd be better off making a list of how many businesses you're not involved in. So I just got to ask you, where did you get started with this whole, who you are today of this consummate business investor, invigorator, turnaround success maker person that you are today? How did that get started?
You know, it started when I was a child. I was actually very interested in everything entrepreneurial from a very young age. And I actually started my first brick and mortar business when I was 16. And it became successful virtually overnight. And I thought that I knew everything. And for quite a while, I was very successful with that, went on to start another business after that, and so learned a lot really just on the battlefield of entrepreneurship.
So I got to ask, because I'm sure my listeners are curious, like, what was that first brick-and-mortar business when you're 16? I mean, is that even legal? I was working at a fast food place for like $3 an hour. Like, holy crumoly, what were you doing?
Yeah, the good old days, you know, back when we were probably that age, it was probably like $3, $3.35 an hour, something like that. And now people are barking, they want 15 for minimum wage, right? But, yeah, it was an arcade. And what I did was I had been writing computer code and learning how video games worked and actually re-engineering the code, the computer code for the video games to play the way I wanted them to play. And I had a friend who knew somebody that worked at an amusement company, and they had pinball machines and the stand-up arcade games and all the skill cranes and the different games that you'd put quarters into. And I got the opportunity to take a tour, and during the tour I asked them, so what does it take to open an arcade? Like, these machines are very expensive. And basically, I don't know if people know this, but those games when they came out, and they still make them today, obviously, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for these games. And so every one of them was like, you know, a car or a house or whatever, depending on the game. And it just seemed completely impossible to me that somebody would buy all of these games and put them into an arcade. And they educated me that it was actually a joint venture, and that if I had a location, they would bring the machines, and all I had to do was generate traffic. The traffic would put the quarters in the machines, and they would come around once a week, empty all of the quarters, and give me half. And so we were in a 50-50 joint venture. So I quickly found a location and called them and said, bring them the machines, and I was off to the races.
Brilliant. I mean, I know that's how it works, but I certainly didn't know that when I was 16. And
yeah,
even if
yeah.
I did, there's not – I mean, I was going into arcades and dropping. And when I was 16, I think when I was 14 is when Pong came out, and I dropped all my quarters in what now, or even for 30 years we've known, is a ridiculously simple, ridiculous game. But being the only video game on Earth, we were enraptured by it. But I certainly – even though I dropped all my lunch money in arcades my whole life, I was never smart enough to do that. So talk about an enterprising entrepreneurial mind. Okay, let's skip ahead now. And one of the recent acquisitions you made is one of my favorite brands, marketing concepts, the late, great J. Conrad Levinson with his guerrilla marketing. Like, you're now building that brand to bigger and better than it ever was. How did that come about?
Absolutely. So you go all the way back to that first business when I was 16. I did that shortly after the first guerrilla marketing book came out. I had heard about it, saw it at the library, read it, deployed those weapons and tactics into growing that first business, into growing my next business and into really every business that I've been involved in my entire, virtually my entire adult life. And so it's always had a special place in my heart. It's helped me to get involved in companies, help them ascend to the next level, break through to the next level. And so along the way, watching the brand develop, it, you know, more than 50 books translated into like 62 languages around the world, selling 23 plus million copies of books, really just became a publishing empire and took on almost a life of its own. You know, Jay, a lot of people don't realize this, but it was really just a retirement gig for him. He started that book when he was teaching at Berkeley. And it just kind of took off from there. And he created a platform that allowed him to go around and speak on stages and be one of the gurus, before we termed people gurus in the marketing realm, but to really be one of those thought leaders and people that commanded a lot of respect and attention in the marketplace. And he never really set out for that to be a business. He just wanted to serve. And so he put a lot of content out there and it moved beyond marketing. You know, Guerrilla Marketing was the first book, but then it became, you know, Guerrilla Deal Making and Guerrilla Joint Ventures and Guerrilla Parenting and just all these different guerrilla concepts that really permeate every part of our life. And Guerrilla is more about a mindset and a way of thinking about accomplishing a whole lot with very little, being very industrious, right? Being very focused on results and not so much just on the flash. One of the things that big companies get wrong is that they have these huge budgets and they operate from a place of if they don't spend it, they'll lose it. They won't get as big a budget next year. And part of your corporate ego is tied to how big your budget is. So you never want your budget to get smaller. And small business owners know that every penny you spend has to generate a positive return. Otherwise, you're wasting money. It's a completely different mindset. So along the way, just staying in tune with the brand, getting to know his wife, Jeannie, and the family, and being able to look at it and go, how can we maintain what's there, honor the legacy that Jay created, but set it up as a reinvigorated brand, a reinvigoration of a global brand, you know, for it to carry on for many, many more decades. And that's the
I love it because, I mean, I only had a chance to meet Jay once when he was pretty much, you know, towards the end, and I made a beeline for when I heard he was speaking somewhere, and I got to meet him and Jeannie, and like just the nicest. I mean, you talk about gurus, and you and I both know there's a lot. We could do, you know, 20 podcast episodes on how many seedy, crooked, dishonorable, you know, unethical people there are in this seedy industry. But Jay was just one just fantastic, great guy. He loved helping people on top of just being a genius. I mean, not only is his guerrilla marketing still living on and now about to be thriving more than ever thanks to your brilliance, but, you know, his beloved characters that are created are still, we're seeing them all the time. I mean, there's Tony the Tiger. There's Charlie the Tuna. There's still all over the place. Like, I just love it. I mean, if anyone deserves a legacy, it's him. And so I love that you're doing this and carrying on. So for someone who's listening here, I think the ears perked up when you said that guerrilla marketing is all about, for people who aren't familiar with the concept, it's for kind of grassroots guerrilla, getting out there and getting some done without the big corporate budgets and without having to be a big business and that kind of stuff, because I'm sure I speak for everyone that we are bombarded with, hey, pay us 10 grand for a website and we'll put you on page one of Google, and for X amount, thousands a month, you can do Facebook ads and Google and this and that. And it's always lots and lots of big money. And then I hear all the time from my clients and other people that I'm helping, like, how can I compete? How can I compete? Well, isn't guerrilla marketing pretty much a big part of the answer?
Absolutely. And a lot of people are confused, right? He was so successful early on at creating some momentum and inertia behind the term guerrilla marketing that it quickly became something of like a Kleenex or a Q-tip. And when people started using the phrase, they started associating it with only the cutesy outdoor advertising that people do in public spaces that grabs your attention. And the fact of the matter is that what guerrilla marketing actually is it is focused on profits first, not ego. So it's not about having something that's cute. It's not about having something that's a big spend. Like you mentioned, first page of Google. Being at the top of Google is an ego conversation, because it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be at the top of the profit pile, right? But if you go into your Google marketing as a gorilla, then you're focused on the profits that you derive from it, not from the sheer placement that you derive from it. Does that make sense?
No, if it makes sense, it's absolutely 100% correct. I mean, that's a kind of a loaded question. You know it's 100% correct.
Yeah.
Because, and it's not just Google, it's everywhere. People would say, yeah. I mean, I've been a victim of it. I did it myself. I remember when I first had my office, and I was just so happy to have my name on the door, and then anybody calling to get me to advertise, as long as they put my name and my logo really big in the ad, I was happy. And then I could show everybody and go, look, remember the first time I threw money away and did some radio advertising that made absolutely no sense to me. It made a lot of sense to the sales rep because it fed his family, but it made no sense to me. But I do remember one time my ad was running around Thanksgiving, or I guess on Thanksgiving, whatever. I was with my family, and I was like, hang on, here it is. And I had everybody turned up the radio at 122 or whatever, and I was like, here it is. And like you said, big ego play. Meanwhile, give me a break. I made some money from it, but like that, I should not have been doing that. So, you know, I've been victim of that, and I've helped so many people that are, and that's your help, and so many people are. So what's the first step to wean ourselves off of this, to even recognize it, to get some help with it? What's the first step to realize that the stuff we're doing, instead of blaming radio doesn't work, TV doesn't work, Google doesn't work, website doesn't work, you know, it all works for somebody. If it's not working for us, maybe we ought to look in the mirror and say, how can I make it work? What's the first step to making that work?
A lot of people get tripped up in complexity. Complexity is the enemy of success in so many ways, especially when it comes to your marketing programs, your marketing initiatives. I was on an airplane the other day talking to the person next to me, and they're a small business owner just working to create a lifestyle for their family and hopefully one day be able to exit that business and everything. And I said, well, have you ever done any guerrilla marketing? Which is a loaded question when I ask it, because I know what they're going to say, right? They're either going to say, oh, yeah, I tried it and it didn't work, or they're going to say, no, I do stuff like direct mail, at which point I go, well, direct mail can be guerrilla marketing,
of right? course.
So everything should be guerrilla marketing. Let me explain to you why. And I went through the process of explaining how the guerrilla is the mindset and the method of execution of that particular type of tactic, like direct mail or radio advertising or your website or the uniform that your people wear or how you wrap your trucks or whatever it is that you're doing. The idea is be focused on profit, be focused on simplicity, be focused on serving your customers first, getting them to spend more with you more frequently, and you're building the basis for a very successful enterprise. And people get tripped up in trying to be full of what I call whiz bangedry. They're trying to make things way too cool, way too slick, way too complicated, and they're putting that ego stroke ahead of the profit stroke. I don't know about you, but the only thing that seems to pay my bills are profits.
Well, of course. I mean, it's tough to tell your landlord, I don't have any money this month, but I got 17 really good ideas. I was at a seminar. Here's 6 pages of notes. Can I live for another month?
Absolutely.
That's the end of part one. Join us next time for part two.
Thank you for joining us today on the Rhino Daily Podcast. The daily podcast for sharp entrepreneurs.
Hosted by Steve Cypress.
Join us tomorrow for another exciting episode designed to help you increase your profits and improve your lifestyle. Go to rhinodaily.com for more great business exploding tips, strategies, and tactics from the world's top experts. Plus your free copy of Rhino Monthly Magazine.
The Rhino Daily Podcast.